Well, I will welcome you back to your seats and we'll get started. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. We are doing something a little bit different this morning than we usually do here at Grace. We're going to do, we're going to have a little bit of worship mixed with a little bit of teaching time. So my suggestion to you this morning is to just buckle up and or hold on to your seat. Hopefully it's linked to the one next to you so you won't fly around too much. But we're talking about rest this morning. Rest. I'm sure that's something that many of us don't get enough of. We joke about it, right? I'll sleep when I'm dead or other ways. But the truth is that there are some very serious reasons, both spiritual and physical, to take rest seriously. Dr. Archibald Hart, the Dean Emeritus of Fuller's School of Theology, once wrote this. Listen to this. He says this: people in a hurry never have time for recovery. Their minds have little time to meditate and pray so that problems can be put in perspective. In short, people in our age are showing signs of physiological disintegration because we're living at a pace that is too fast for our own bodies. He says people are showing signs of physiological disintegration because we're living at a pace that is too fast for our bodies. Y'all, he wrote this in his book called Adrenaline and Stress, which he published in 1995. We're living at a pace that's too fast for our bodies. That's pre-smartphone era, okay? 2007 is when the iPhone came out, and we haven't slowed down, I don't think, right, since 1995. If anything, life's gotten much faster. My guess is you're probably swimming in a pile of information that you're trying to process every single day, whether it's from the news on your smartphone or on your computer or your tablet or whatever. In addition to that, you may probably feel the pressure of the hustle at work, worried that so-and-so will rise through the ranks faster than you if you slow down. Maybe you've been caught up in the vicious cycle of extracurricular activities with your kids that never stop. You're running here and there and then back to here again 5 minutes later. Maybe retirement doesn't actually feel as restful as you thought it would. I've talked to a number of folks in their 70s and 80s who say, gosh, I retired and I thought it was going to be, you know, all relaxing and stuff. And it's actually more busy than when I was working. Rest. It's a beautiful concept. But it's one that feels often outside of our reach. We can't quite grab a hold of it, so we just plod on. And we keep living at a pace that is way too fast for our bodies. And we suffer both the spiritual and the physical consequences for it. You know, Jesus, though, has some really powerful things to say about rest. And we're going to unpack some of what he says this morning. And this is really important stuff. So I hope that you'll let down any walls that you might have. So, because you might be thinking right now, there's no way I can add more margin in my life. I have too many responsibilities. I have too much going on. I am just too busy in reality. And I just pray that you could let some of those walls down so that you could listen to Jesus' words this morning. They're an offering to you today. You don't actually have to live caught up in the hustle. Believe it or not, you don't have to wear the stress of always having to be ahead. There's another way, and that is the way of our Savior, Jesus. So, to begin this morning, I want you to listen to these words from Matthew chapter 11, verses 28 through 30. I'm going to read them out loud twice. So take a breath this morning and hear what Jesus is saying to you today. Here and now, at 10:15 Sunday morning, he's saying to you this. Jesus says, "Come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm gentle and I'm humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light." Matthew 11, 28 through 30. Listen to these words. Jesus says, "Come to me, all of you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light. There's going to be a reflection question up on the screens for you in a moment, and I just want to encourage you to think through your answer to this question. And Ken is going to lead us in another song in just a moment. So take a minute and think through this question. So the song we just sang said that I've seen many searching for answers far and wide. The question then is, what is the question that we're searching for answers to? Because I think this is true, that we are all searching for answers. According to the Christian story, human beings are stuck in an endless search for alignment spiritually. That's what righteousness is. Righteousness is living in line with what is right. See, we lost our alignment when sin entered the world, and we've been struggling pretty hard ever since. We're like a car with wheels that are out of balance, just kind of kerplunking along, knowing that like something is wrong, but we can't quite figure out what that something is. We know there's something better, but because we're broken, we can't figure out what right is. So we just keep searching far and wide, looking for answers and not getting much rest. And so what happens is, as we're searching, we end up turning to ourselves for solutions. A decision that inevitably, always, every single time, leads to striving more, trying more, working more. Isn't that right? That's what we end up doing as human beings. It's in our desperate attempts to feel aligned with what's right, we create systems of rules to live by and to follow. And we think that somehow these systems that we devise will help us feel aligned and calm our anxious feelings of being off kilter and kerplunking along. And let me tell you, we've designed some pretty clever ways of trying to feel aligned, right? We are good at this. And we say, okay, if I do this, this, and this, then that'll make me feel aligned with God and what's right. Or on the flip side, if I don't do this, this, and this, then I'll feel aligned and God will be happy with me. Or we somewhere fall in the middle and we mix the two together. We do these things, we don't do these things, and we have our system. But you know what? Ultimately, human striving and our attempts to realign ourselves, it just leads to self-righteousness. See, what we do is we set up our personal system of self-alignment to suit our needs, our feelings. And then we start expecting people around us to live according to our rules, because of course we know what righteousness means, and righteousness means living according to our system. That's what you need to do to live right and be aligned. So if someone else doesn't measure up to our rules, then they must be doing it wrong, right? They must not be aligned. So if you don't drive the right car or go to the right school, then you're doing it wrong. If you don't have this much money or this many friends on social media, then you're doing it wrong. If you don't hang out with these people or play this sport, then you're doing it wrong and you're not living well and living rightly. And I wish I could say this stops when people start following Jesus, right? But it doesn't, does it? It doesn't. If anything, this has been my own critique of the church and myself to date. We've replaced God's grace, God's love, and kindness with our personal preferences, and then we've raised our religious and spiritual preferences to the level of God's directives, and then we expect everyone around us to follow our rules because it makes us feel good about ourselves when we live this way, and we want everyone around us to feel like they have to live that way as well. And church, this is just unacceptable. This is not the gospel. This is not the gospel. Your system, my system, is not the gospel. And all it does is lead to us working harder and working harder. And the most troubling part of all of this, though, is that our self-righteous systems that we create don't even really work for us, do they? Our system of do's and don'ts puts this unmanageable weight on our shoulders. It's this monster on our back that we can't even live up to ourselves. And we know it. You see the inconsistencies in your own heart. You don't actually match what your system says you should do. You know you're falling short of that, and not only that, but you're falling short of what God's good is. But because your identity is so wrapped up in your system, you can't admit that you're broken. Because as soon as you do that, then here comes the whole weight of anxiety and feelings of misalignment again. So, we cover our inadequacies, and we shine the spotlight on other people's problems. Keep the attention off of us, because that helps us feel a little bit better. And this was the problem that the super religious people of Jesus' day ran into, the Pharisees. They had become so obsessed with trying to justify themselves, with trying to live according to this system of work and striving and following these hundreds and hundreds of rules that they applied on top of the rule of God, that they developed, it was impossible for them to live according to it. So when Jesus says in Matthew 11, 28, or 29 and 30, "Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light," he's directly contrasting the way of the religious people of his day. He's saying, look, their yoke is heavy, burdensome, difficult, and impossible. No matter how hard you try spiritually, no matter how hard you push, no matter how many rules you add, you'll never be able to do it. You'll never be able to make yourself aligned and righteous before God. You're insufficient for the task. I'm insufficient for the task. Instead, Jesus offers a different way. He says, "Come to me, all you who are weary, and all you who are burdened, and all you who are tired of having this weight of rules and systems, and you're just exhausted spiritually. Come to me, and I will give you rest." See, if you and I come to Jesus, we can set down our systems and our self-alignment methods, and we can rest our souls. We can rest our souls. We don't have to continue that rat race of looking for alignment on our own. You know why? Because Jesus offers us that alignment and that righteousness that we need. And so if you're feeling tired this morning and you're keenly aware of your inconsistencies in your own heart, then please let me remind you that your realignment has already been accomplished by the death of Jesus on the cross. You don't have to strive anymore. It's already been done. You can just receive it from him. When Jesus said, "It is finished," it is finished, he meant it. It's not, "It is finished," and then create some system that'll help you get the rest of the way. No, Jesus' work is finished for you. You can confidently step into the light of the gospel and look at all of your crap. You can look at where you don't love God well. You can look at where you don't love your spouse well. You can look at those corners of your heart that are in bondage to pornography and lust. You can look at those spaces within you that are obsessed with gossiping about other women or comparing yourself to them. You're free to look at your garbage inside your heart because Jesus already achieved your righteousness on your behalf. And you, your value does not depend on you living according to your system of rules and regulations to make you feel good. Your value comes from being loved by Jesus. Jesus removes that burden of self-righteousness from your shoulders, and he replaces it with his easy yoke of discipleship. Your striving ends when you start following Jesus. Your striving to be aligned ends when you start following Jesus. He says, "Come, follow me, and I'm going to train you to be like me." Dallas Willard says that the Christian life is not about trying. It's not about trying anymore. It's about training. We're retraining our hearts to love what Jesus loves, to desire what Jesus desires, to go after what Jesus goes after. That is the life of discipleship. That's the life of the easy yoke that Jesus offers to us. It's not trying anymore. It's training to be like Jesus. Some of you are still trying this morning. You'd even call yourself a Jesus follower, but you're acting like it still all depends on you. And you're probably worn out, would be my guess. My guess is that you'd probably be desperate for some sort of relief. You're asking yourself, is this really what it means to follow Jesus? I can do this without Jesus. I can create a system of rules and regulations and morals. Friends, let me tell you, I've been there. I know exactly what that feeling is like. I know what it's like to go to bed at night and wonder if you're getting anywhere in your life of following Jesus. And let me just tell you this morning, you're not going to get very far if you measure your success in the Christian life by how well you follow your own system of rules. You'll never be able to shoulder that burden on your own. And the people around you will probably start to get sick of you trying to force them to follow your rules too. Your life of following Jesus becomes a success when you begin to release the broken human desire to work for your righteousness, and instead you choose to rest in what Jesus has already accomplished for you. He says that you're accepted just as you are. He says that you are loved just as you are. You can let your soul rest in the hands of Jesus, who already achieved your righteousness for you and who gives it to you freely. And you can release yourself to stop trying and start training to become like Jesus. Have you noticed how obsessed our culture is with a full and busy schedule? Tim Kreider is an American essayist who has written for the New York Times. Listen to this excerpt from his piece entitled, "The Busy Trap." He says this, "Almost everyone I know is busy. They feel anxious and guilty when they aren't either working or doing something to promote their work. They schedule in time with friends in the same way students with 4.0 GPAs make sure to sign up for community service because it looks good on their college applications." He goes on to say, the present hysteria, the busyness of life, is not a necessary or inevitable conclusion of life. It's something that we've chosen, if only by our acquiescence to it, he says. So this is what Kreider concludes about busyness. Listen to this. He says, "Busyness serves as a kind of reassurance, a hedge against emptiness. Obviously, your life cannot possibly be silly or trivial or meaningless if you're so busy, completely booked, and in demand every hour of the day." So for many in our culture, a full busy schedule equals meaning and purpose. We spend our lives running around like crazy so we can give ourselves the illusion that we matter, that our lives have meaning. Like Kreider says, how could we possibly be trivial or meaningless if we're so busy and booked and in demand all the time? But you know, the truth is, peel back the covering, the truth is, instead of providing lasting meaning and purpose, a busy schedule just gives us exhausted, empty people. Right? Like Archibald Hart said, I referenced this at the beginning, people in our age are showing signs of physiological disintegration because we're living at a pace too fast for our bodies. You feel it. I feel it. We're trying to maintain a pace that is physically unsustainable. But if our meaning and our purpose is tied to our busyness and our production, then we can't stop. Because our worth and our value go down equal to how busy we are and how much we output. So if that's where our meaning comes from, or our facade of purpose, then we got to keep going. Otherwise, we lose value. So as Christians, though, we would disagree. And we would say, right, our worth, our value, what gives us meaning comes from God. And that's absolutely correct. You're not valuable because of what you produce. You're valuable because you're made in the image of God. Inherent value. It doesn't go anywhere. But attention still remains. So even though we believe that our worth comes from our identity as someone made in the image of God, our actions oftentimes say otherwise. For many of us, our schedules don't look very different from other people who are maybe not following Jesus. We've still packed in extracurricular activities or overtime hours. We're regularly burning the candle on both ends, and when those run out, we're burning it in the middle. And we're running our bodies on caffeine because we just got to get through the day and get through all of our responsibilities. Our bodies start to lag and we feel it. And all of this is true because we haven't let our belief about where our value comes from sink down into our behavior. The truth is, again, that Jesus offers us a better way, a way of rest, a way of physical rest. Jesus says in Mark 2:27, these words, the Sabbath was made to meet the needs of people and not people to meet the requirements of the Sabbath. The Sabbath, a day of rest, a day of being with your family and being with your friends, a day of worship. You see, the religious people of Jesus's day were experts on the Sabbath. They knew all the rules that you needed to follow, and they only walk this far on the Sabbath. Don't carry this on the Sabbath. Don't start a fire on the Sabbath. Don't cook on the Sabbath. In the midst of all their rules, they had missed the point of the Sabbath. And the Sabbath was created to meet a basic human need for physical rest and for spiritual rest. But it was intentional white space that God put on the calendar of the Jewish people to give them time to be restful physically. Now, if they fell off the horse on the side of too many rules and too many regulations surrounding the Sabbath, we've, I think, fallen off the horse on the other side, where we don't give enough time to thinking about Sabbathing, resting our physical bodies. You see, we still have a basic human need for physical rest. We can't actually keep 100-mile-an-hour pace in life and think we'll sustain it. We're not designed to function that way. And you might say, well, Dave, it's just a busy season, man. I'll Sabbath when this season is past. I'll rest. And I think God is good. He knows us. He knows us. And I think God knew that we could be sneaky like that. I think God knew that we could be sneaky, because he says this in Exodus 34:21. He says this: 6 days you shall labor, but on the seventh day you shall rest. Cool. We're down with that. After the season is over. But he says, you'll rest even during the plowing season and harvest. You must rest. Did you catch that? So we don't get our sneaky out. This is the culture of this time was an agrarian culture. So your plowing season, your harvest season, this was essential to your life. Like if you miss this or miss the time to harvest, you're going to be potentially in trouble if you don't get the harvest in on time or you don't get planted in the right season. But even during those critical moments, God says to the people of Israel, you must rest. So even when you're in the midst of a giant project, a lucrative season, you must rest. Even when the pressures of deadlines and end games are on you, you must rest. Why? Because physical rest is a spiritual act. It's a spiritual discipline. It's an acknowledgement that you're finite and just one person. It's you saying, I'm not capable of going nonstop. I wasn't created to live like that. I must rest. It's an acknowledgement that the world keeps on spinning even when you stop. And that God sustains everything that's going on. Not you, not me. Physical rest is, as Adele Calhoun says, a truly human act of submission and dependence on God, who watches over all things as we rest. And we can so easily believe the lie that we find our meaning and purpose when our schedules are jam-packed and crazy. But the truth is that we actually find our identity, discover our meaning when we have margin, when we have white space on our calendars to rest our bodies and enjoy time with God, enjoy time with family, enjoy time with friends. That's not lazy. That's healthy. It's at this moment that I'm kind of expecting a number of you. And if I was sitting where you are too, I'd probably include myself in this, to just kind of start checking out and coming up with like excuses as to why we can't make margin, right? Everything on your calendar is important, right? That's why it's on your calendar, because it's important. I can't take an entire day off from work. Go to bed on time, you must be nuts. Not going to happen. Those were my reflections. I don't know what your voice tells you inside your head. But think about this with me for just a moment. God is the one who set up these rhythms of work and rest for a reason. We can't just ignore them and pretend that we'll be all right. It doesn't work like that. Eventually, it's going to catch up to you. It's going to catch up to me. And it'll start affecting us in a number of different ways. So maybe you'll start getting shorter and shorter with your spouse or your kids. Your productivity at work will actually go down. When you hear about living on mission with God, that just sounds exhausting and not really life-giving, because it's just another thing to add to your already busy, crazy life. But I think that your body and my body is crying out for respite. You need to Sabbath. I need to Sabbath. Jesus welcomes you to find your meaning and purpose in Sabbath rest that he offers you. The choice is yours. Will you step into that rest and experience the life that it contains? Will you reorder your calendar to reflect the belief that your value comes from your identity in Jesus and not in what you produce, in what you achieve, or what you obtain, or what you do? Will you say no to a lot of good things so that you can be rested for the best things? See, the truth is, you don't have to live at breakneck speed for the rest of your life. You can enter the physical rest that Jesus offers you. He says to you this morning, the Sabbath, the day of rest, was created for you because you're just a human being and you need it. It's God giving you privilege and license to say, can't do that. I need to rest. Can't do that. I can't live at that pace. I need to rest. And that's okay. That's okay. I want to give you just a small chance to just think through this a little bit more. So there'll be another question prompt here on the screen for you to kind of reflect on. And the band will lead us in another song in just a minute. But as this question prompt comes up, I would encourage you to think through it and see if the Lord might have something to say to you this morning. Well, I hope that this morning has been a space for you. I hope that we've been able to create a little bit of room for you to think about some challenging things. Jesus' words are not easy to sometimes hear. Sometimes they really challenge the core of what we are and what we do. But I hope that these words of Jesus ring in your ears this next week when he says, "Come to me, all who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. I will give you spiritual rest. I will give you physical rest." I hope that you can enter that rest this morning. It's waiting for you. Let me encourage you not to let culture define your life. but may the life and peace of Jesus impact the culture through us as we live into the rest that he's given us. So I'll leave you with these words from Psalm 62:5. There the psalmist writes, "Yes, my soul, find rest in God. My hope comes from him." So may you find your rest in God this week. May you live from your position of acceptance and righteousness in Jesus, knowing that you don't have to strive to make God happy with you, because he already is. May your life of peace and rest be a beacon of hope to people you live with, work with, and enjoy life with this week. Blessings to you all. We love you, and we'll see you next week. Don't forget to grab your kids and come hang out for Hang 10. Blessings. We'll see you next week.